The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 8778-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hello, Giants fans, and welcome to a new edition of the Valentine Fuse Podcast here on Big Blue View Radio, part of the SB Nation family of podcasts. I'm your host, Ed Valentine of Big Blue View, and today's show is going to be mostly a preview of Sunday's Giants-Washington Redskins game, and here to help me break all of that down, talk a little Daniel Jones, talk a little Dwayne Haskins, is Emery Hunt of Football Game Plan. Em, how you doing? Thanks for joining me.
I'm doing fine. Ed, as always, I appreciate you having me on.
Hey, like to have you whenever we can, whenever your busy schedule permits allows us to get a few minutes of your time.
Man, listen, I'm glad you hit me up because I needed a break. I was going crazy in a minute. It's barreling down on college football, my college football broadcast season. So it's between getting prepared for broadcast, getting prepared for scouting trips, producing three TV shows that we have Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. It's been a lot. So when you hit me up, it was like, yes, I get to take a break.
Do you ever have time to eat?
Oh, we always make room to eat. Like, let's not be twisted. We're going to always find food.
So does that mean you're going to add, food critic to your resume?
I should, man. If people follow me on Instagram, they see I'm a little food Insta stories. I'm always showing what I'm cooking in the kitchen and stuff like that, or where I'm at eating out on the town.
Oh, man, you're one of those people. You got to show people what you're going to eat. You're like one of those athletes who you don't eat a meal unless you show it, like these athletes who never worked out without putting it on Instagram.
No, I'm not that bad. But if it's something like, if it's, normal, it's a subtle flex, like, okay, here's a glass of wine that I'm having, or here's a nice little, piece of fish or some pasta or wherever I'm at. I don't have to get, you're never going to see me at a table taking a whole picture of the meal with a flash on. That's not me. And I probably won't tag the place until afterwards, till I'm long gone. Because, you get, like, fans coming in. Oh, everybody, we want an autograph. so I don't want to deal with all that.
There you go. So, hey, let's talk a little Giants, a little Redskins here. Really interesting game coming up. A little bit more interesting than it might have been a week ago. I got to ask you, are you as bummed as I am that we're not going to see, Danny Dimes versus Dwayne Haskins?
I'm a little bit bummed because you want to, with the way everybody's starting these rookies, you want to see it right away. But, you got to remind yourself that you're probably going to see this for a decade. So, rushing to see it now, as much as we want to see it, we're going to see it a lot over the course of at least 5 to 6 years. You can't really say decade plus anymore in the NFL. So we'll get our chance to see Haskins and Jones. And from what they're saying about, Keenum's foot, we may see Haskins Jones Sunday.
Yeah, I know that Jay Gruden, Redskins coach, has said, he said Monday night, he said again Tuesday, I think he said again on Wednesday that he has no plans to
to start Dwayne Haskins, but who knows? You know, Case Keenum's health might change that.
Yeah, and to be fair to Keenum, it hasn't been a situation where you look at the Redskins, and outside of Monday night, obviously, where you look at the Redskins and say, you know, Keenum's struggling. Like, it hasn't been that. So there hasn't been the push to put Haskins in. You know, if anything, they don't have a running game to speak of. That's that, and Josh Norman continues to get burned. That's been a big reason why they've been losing.
So I have to ask you, I haven't had a chance to talk to you since Sunday, since the debut of Daniel Jones. Just, we're a little bit removed from it now. Just your thoughts on that kind of a debut, you know, for Jones as a starting quarterback.
I think what you saw on Sunday is like, it was if I use this comparison correctly, it's like a buffet, right? Because normally when you see rookies start, you're only going to see one thing. You're either going to see him have a great performance with no adversity, him struggle with only adversity, or him just, you know, a mixed bag where it's like, okay, well, yeah, it was okay. But I thought for Daniel Jones, he saw everything, you know, so that therefore it helps the coaching staff and helps him move forward. We saw him get off to a good start. We saw him have his struggles and go through adversity. You know, he had the fumbles. You know, there was a stretch where it was just, he wasn't really in sync. Then we saw him have great play. Then the great play down the stretch, which was the key part, you know. So coaches have a lot to say, okay, this is what he did well. This is what he could work on. This is what we could throw out because it's ineffective. So I thought it was a great showing for him because it was a lot to work with, and you saw a lot of different things. And so that way you have a better idea of what to expect moving forward. Because if you saw a great performance or a terrible performance, you would really come into this ball game not knowing what to expect.
You know, I thought as you look back on it from the very beginning with Jones, you know, going all the way back to rookie minicamp, it has never looked like any of this was too big for him. And to me, that's the most impressive thing. You're going to see athleticism. You're going to see, you know, him be able to outrun defenders once in a while. You're going to see a bad throw like the one that he made that got dropped the other day. You're going to see all of those things. But I think for me, the biggest thing has been, this has never been too big for him. He can handle it.
Well, I think the reason why you have that assessment is because of the amount of starts and the amount of football he's played. So I don't know how old he is. I want to say he's, what, 22, maybe 23, something like that.
I believe 22, but I'd have to look it up.
But he played a lot of football. You know, I want to say, what, 30-plus starts in college. So it's not going to be too big for him. It's not going to be, you know, he's not going to be shell-shocked. And I don't even think that's his personality. You know, just seeing him, he just kind of, it didn't, I hate to throw it out there, but he's Eli-like in that regard to where, you know, you couldn't tell if he's happy or sad. You know, you just kind of like, oh, that's Daniel Jones. You know, it's just, that's just his personality. So he doesn't let you in on how he is feeling, or if it's too big for him, you probably would never know. You know, I guess that's a part of his, how he's just, you know, his makeup. He's just not an animated person. But, you know, coming with a lot of starts, a lot of games, it's like, okay, this is just a different stadium, a bigger stadium than what we played in at Duke, or, you know, in some cases. So for him, it's just like another game. I've been with this group since April. I'm comfortable here. And, you know, he just took it all in stride and did well.
Yeah, and how curious are you, you know, a debut like that where the Giants, you know, come back from 18 points down, which I think is bigger than any comeback that Eli Manning ever made. You know, and he's gotten so much national attention and so many what I want to call mea culpas from, you know, from analysts who didn't like him coming out of the draft. I mean, what does the guy do for an encore? What, you know, what can we expect, or what do you think we're going to see, you know, on Sunday and going forward?
The good part about, let's say, someone like Daniel Jones juxtaposed to, you know, someone like a Baker Mayfield. You know, you see Daniel Jones, you see Deshaun Watson, you see Lamar Jackson. They had the same detractors. They had a lot of, you know, people questioning whether or not they could play, if they could succeed at the level. And they just went out there and just played. They didn't spend time responding to everything like we see Mayfield do. You know, because if your production isn't there, you're proving people right. And the best way to have people have that mea culpa is to go out there and continue to play well. So for him, he never was the talker. Remember, we were at practice that day when they tried to get him to respond to Baker Mayfield. And, you know, it was making him feel uncomfortable, like trying to force him to respond to something where in his personality, he's just like, you know, I don't really care. You know, it's, yeah, I heard he said it, but it's just kind of like, all right, cool. But he just went out there and just continued to play. That's the best form of shutting people up, is to go out there and continue to perform. So for him, he doesn't have to say anything because everybody else is saying everything. And that's how it has been since he's gotten there. And he, in a way, can go out there and just focus on football because he never was a talker. He doesn't have to talk. And that allows him to zone in and focus, unlike what we're seeing going on in Cleveland, where you feel like Baker feels the need to respond to every piece of criticism out there or every comment out there about him.
That's a really good point, Em. You know, and it's funny because as you were talking about that, I was thinking that when he was a member of the Giants, that's all I ever wanted Odell Beckham to do was to stop responding, to stop drawing attention to himself for things that weren't about the stuff that went on, you know, between the lines on the football field, and just let his play, you know, speak for him. And that's the best thing Jones is going to be able to do.
Yeah. And I'm pro, you know, people, athletes, people in general speaking their minds. I'm pro that. So if you have something that my dad always told me, don't open your mouth unless you have something to say. You know, obviously that's, you know, metaphorically speaking, you know, have something of purpose to say, a substance, right? But there's a time when you know, you don't have to respond to everyone saying your name. You know, and you don't have to respond to everybody's comment or everybody's, you know, take on you or as a person or as a player. You know, at the end of the day, why give that person or that outlet or that entity any energy when you can just go out there? I mean, you know the truth. You know, let's say, for instance, going back to, I remember when I was a senior in high school and the newspaper predicted us to be like dead last in our district. And we looked at the paper and we were just laughing, like, you know, me and my homeboy, who was another running back in the backfield, we were laughing. It was like, man, they say we're going to be terrible. How? I'm on the team. What do they mean we're going to be terrible? And we went out there and started the season 8-0. So as long as you know the truth and you know how good you are, then there's nothing that needs to be said.
That's a good point. So, Em, let's talk about someone else that the Giants are going to see on Sunday who's had quite a bit to say about the Giants, oftentimes without using the name Giants in recent months. And of course, I'm talking about Landon Collins. Are you know, first and foremost, I'm very interested to see what kind of reception he gets from the people at MetLife. He was a popular player, you know, with the Giants, and yet I think a lot of his comments have probably sabotaged quite a bit of that goodwill.
Yeah, and that's a great way to phrase it, because I was thinking, you know, he was very popular, but when you were, you know, laying out that question, man, he's going to get booed like no one's business on Sunday. Because of what has transpired since he left, you know, and it's, you know, one thing they say in business, never, you know, take anything personal. And you can't in this business, especially seeing how many transactions go on day to day. It's never personal. It's always business. And so, you know, when you take it personal, people are going to respond. So I would expect him to get, you know, a cold welcome here in the Meadowlands because of how much he's you know, talked, provoked or unprovoked since he left.
I do think that's a very good way of putting it, Em. I think that Landon Collins unquestionably took the Giants' decision, you know, to move on from him. He took it personally, and he said some things. I mean, you know, I wonder if Dave Gettleman should maybe make sure he's got bodyguards on Sunday afternoon.
I remember as athletes, you always want someone to be straight up with you. And I remember my freshman year in college, you know, I thought I had what was a great day of practice, you know, and I see my name on a depth chart. I'm fifth. And I'm like, okay, cool. I'm true freshman. I'm supposed to be fifth. Then after that day, I'm like, all right, cool. I should move up at least one spot. And so I was sitting in the meeting and I'm like, I'm watching me break all these runs and I'm sitting there steaming because coach is like, you know, just ignoring it. And I'm like, so I asked him after we break the meeting, I was like, coach, well, you know, I did it good. How am I, you know, moving up or what's the, and he said, listen, he said, first of all, you got to get stronger. You're not seeing the hole. You got to get a little bit quicker. And I'm thinking like, well, damn. But since from that point, I was like, all right, now I understand what I have to do to get better. I didn't take it personal. Had I took it personal, I would be like, oh, coach don't like me, you know? But coach told me like, no, you did. Yeah, that's fine. But we expect you to do that. But you can do so much more if you do X, Y, and Z. And it's like, oh, okay. So that opened my eyes tremendously. And I took that not only and applied it to football, but I thought that was a huge life lesson. Like, man, don't look for praise for stuff you're supposed to be doing anyway. Like, you know, just go and do the extra things and be great, and then you'll get everything that you're looking for from an acknowledgement standpoint.
Right. You know, Collins was, when you think about it, Collins was a good player here, and it wasn't that the Giants were saying to him, you know, you stink, we don't want you on this football team. It was simply, look, we know what kind of paycheck you're looking for. And when you talked about business and in our business, you know, we don't want to spend that kind of money at your position, and they moved on.
Yeah. And it's, you can't take that personally. We saw a similar situation play out in New Orleans with them and Mark Ingram. And, you know, they kind of was allowing Ingram to test the market, and he let him, you know, walk. He quickly signs with Baltimore, and then you see the contract that they sign Latavius Murray. And if Ingram would have just had a little bit more patience and took a business approach to it and not took it personal, he would have got that contract and would have ended up with a little bit more in New Orleans to stay as opposed to going to Baltimore.
All right, so let me take a quick break here for a word from our sponsors, and then I want to come back and we'll talk a little bit more. I want to talk about some of the Giants' young defenders, and I want to talk with you about one of the really impressive Redskins rookies, but let's get in a quick break here first.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
All right, Giants fans, we're back here on the Valentine's Views podcast. I'm your host, Ed Valentine, and I'm talking with Emory Hunt of Football Game Plan about Sunday's Giants-Redskins game. Em, let's talk a little bit about the Giants' defense. Now, I know when you look at the numbers, I know how bad it is. I think they're second in the league in points given up. You know, I think they've given up 70 points in the first half. They had a streak last week where they gave up points to Tampa Bay on six straight possessions. They had a streak against Dallas where they gave up points on five straight possessions. But I guess maybe I'm trying to look at the glass as half full, because I'm looking at it and I'm thinking from week one to week three, DeAndre Baker got better. From week one to week three, Dexter Lawrence has gotten better. We're getting, the Giants are getting some production from O'Shane Zimenez. They've got, you know, rookie linebacker Ryan Connolly in the lineup now. So I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, if you look at this year as a building block kind of year for that defense, you're starting to see some positive signs from some of these young kids.
Yeah, you can't look at it and say, all right, we expect this for me, I personally thought this defense would be much improved over last year because I was banking on rookies making impacts. And week three, you're starting to see, like you talked about, some guys are starting to improve. However, you do want to see some improvement, and you don't want to see guys that you banked on being good to take steps back, like Janoris Jenkins. You don't want to see that. But I think when you look at the defense, playing a young guy at, you know, multiple young guys at every level of the defense, you want to see the slow growth. You don't want to see the same mistake twice. And as long as you're not seeing that, you're going to see improvement, because with improvement comes confidence. With confidence comes, consistency, and with consistency comes the playmaking. And that's when you're going to start to see guys really turn it on and play fast. And right now, you know, the rookies are still trying to get caught up to regular season speed. No, they were caught up to NFL speed in camp and then in preseason, but now they get NFL regular season speed. So you want to see the young guys continue to grow, which you're going to start to see probably more opportunities for O'Shane Zimenez. Conley, like you mentioned, we talked about him ad nauseum throughout the summer and his impact. So you want to see those guys. Now you just want to see the secondary. You know, Julian Love has yet to make that impact, hasn't really been active. You want to see Corey Ballantyne try to make a dent into the regular defensive rotation because he has ball hawk playmaking skills. So as they become more comfortable with the scheme and coaches can trust putting them out there, then they'll get out there and they'll be able to play fast and make plays. But you do like to see the growth from the Dallas game to the Buffalo game to what we saw last week against Tampa.
The one of those guys that I really want to ask you about is Dexter Lawrence, for the simple reason that everyone was so concerned about the Giants or upset with them for not drafting a pure pass rusher at that particular point. What are your thoughts on what we've seen from Lawrence so far and what kind of a player you think he can be?
Speaking from a running back's perspective, a guy like Lawrence is such an annoying player because he's so massive and he's so explosive off the ball. You don't think a guy that's 350, 6'5", could move like that. He has great ball get off. And because he's so long and huge width-wise, girth-wise, you know, he takes up gaps. And now let's say you're running a play and that play is designed to get a guard to the second level. There's no guard getting to the second level if Lawrence is right there. So now everything is bottled up. Now you got to cut back. And if you try to cut back, you're cutting back into the arms of these lengthy outside linebackers and Lorenzo Carter and O'Shane Zimenez. So a guy like Lawrence being up front and having the explosiveness to be a pressure player, not necessarily a pass rusher, but a guy that can collapse a pocket or generate quick pressure where he throws off a blocking assignment for a running back for a running play, or causes a quarterback to move off the spot. It may not show up in the stat sheet, but it counts on the field as a disruptive play because he's so quick and explosive off the ball, and he has really good point of attack strength. And so for him, I think what we saw last game against the Bucs is a sign of things to come, because now he's just starting to play ball. Again, he was more of a gap occupier at Clemson. Here they're asking him to play a little bit out of his element, playing at the five, which is fine because you're still playing sort of inside. And like Coach Betcher said, offensive lines can, make you play any technique that they want you to play by how they shift their blocking scheme. So yeah, he may be a five, but they could be playing him like he's a one. You know, so for Lawrence to be disruptive, he just has to beat his guy one-on-one and generate that double team, and we saw him start to do that against Tampa.
You know, it's the way that you describe that kind of made me smile a little bit, because one of the things that I have said repeatedly about Dexter Lawrence is that I think that when you look at Dexter Lawrence, you're not going to look at a guy who might, you know, per se pile up huge statistical numbers, a great, you know, number of tackles, high number of sacks, but it's the type of things that he allows everyone else around him to do that you look for as he develops, I think.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, man, it's a situation where, you know, people always stereotype because of size. So they'll see a guy, you know, like a Sam Mills and think like, oh, he must be, you know, he doesn't really want to tackle because he's a short, squatty guy. And he's the hardest hitting tackler out there at the linebacker position. You see a guy like Dexter Lawrence, and oh, he can't move. You know, I can easily outrun him. But you forget how quick he is and how agile he is. He carries his weight really well to where he doesn't look like he's 350 when you're standing there looking at him. Like, man, he looks like he's about 320. But, you know, he's a big dude, and he also has good quickness and, you know, little ankles, and he can change direction. So you stereotype him based off what you see on the depth chart. But when you get out there and you see him move, it really throws everything off.
You know, I do want to ask you about one of the other Redskins players, but you mentioned Janoris Jenkins. And I wrote in a column earlier this week, you know, I've never been a big Jack Rabbit fan. I've never been, you know, he had the one really good year for the Giants in 2016. But to be honest, with the Rams, he was kind of an athletic guy who really didn't play up to maybe his name recognition. In my view, hasn't done a whole lot, you know, with the Giants since that 2016 season. I wonder if he's a guy who's even going to finish this season with the Giants. I wonder if when the trade deadline gets closer, if they might look to see if they can unload him and get some snaps for Corey Ballantyne, get some snaps for Sam Beal if they can get healthy. Just give me a couple thoughts on Jackrabbit.
No, you're right. I can see your point of view in that sense, because, you know, if you're going to go full youth movement, you invested heavily in the secondary. You want to get those guys live regular season game reps. And the only thing blocking that at one spot, at least, is Janoris Jenkins, who is, you know, 31 years old. You know, he's probably on the back end of his career. You know, cornerbacks don't tend to play as long as quarterbacks do. You have to be like a freak athlete, like a Terrence Newman, Darryl Green, you know, one of those guys, Deion Sanders. So for the most part, corners tend to hit that wall, like people say about running backs, because they have the toughest position out there on the field, because you constantly stop and start. You know, you have to keep up with younger, faster guys. They get younger and faster on that end. You get older and slower on your end. So I could see someone, you know, tapping the Giants, maybe a team that's, you know, in the playoff run or in the playoff mix, needing a veteran, feeling comfortable with a veteran, and reaching out to the Giants to see, you know, if he's available. I could definitely see that happening, because you got Ballantyne, you got Love, you want to get those guys playing time. Bill, if he can get healthy, you have him out there too. You want all of those guys to play this year, so you have better prospects going into 2020, knowing what you have in the secondary.
Got to ask you about one of those younger, faster wide receivers that you mentioned. And, you know, the guy that I'm really curious to watch on Sunday for the Redskins, and that's Terry McLaurin, the rookie receiver. If I'm not mistaken, I think he's set a record for, or he's become, I think, the first rookie wide receiver to have at least five receptions and one touchdown catch in his first three NFL games. Just tell me about McLaurin, about what you expected, you know, from him, you know, coming into the league, and if any of his performance to this point has surprised you at all?
Yeah, when I grade receivers, I break them down into four separate positions: split ends, flankers, slot receivers, and your bigger inside guys. So I had McLaurin as a flanker, and he was my fourth rated flanker in the draft class with a 79 grade. So I had a real high grade on him. And what I like about him is the fact that he has that DeSean Jackson type ability where he can track the football really well. Now, he's not as fast as Jackson, but he tracks the ball like Jackson is what I'm saying. And you saw him, you know, win multiple times at the catch point at Ohio State. Then you get down to the Senior Bowl and you see him doing a great job in one-on-ones. And I know one-on-ones is heavily slanted toward the offensive side because there's no pass rush. There's no help coverage. So you could really do everything that you want to do out there as a route runner and get open. But it was impressive to see him separate from defensive backs down there in Mobile. So fast forward to the season and going through the preseason, not surprised that he was able to flash, because when you have him running against, you give him a two-way go where you're putting him inside, putting him on the move in motion, he's going to win those battles because he's got good acceleration. He snaps out of his break. So it makes you stay on your toes and really take a chance defensively, because if I don't know which way you're going and you're explosive out of your break, I got to guess that you're going to go this way and use my full speed to hopefully keep up with you or beat you to the spot. But he's so doggone fast and savvy. He understands leverage. He understands how to, you know, speed up to gear down and things like that. So he does he has a lot of polish in his game. And you're seeing it out there now, which is why you're seeing him get open. And Case Keenum has seemed to have built a really good rapport with him, especially on third downs or inside the red zone.
All right, Em. So real quickly, are we going to see you out there on Sunday?
Yeah, I'll be there. I'll be there Sunday. It'll be a great game because you have the Redskins defense against this Giants offense. I think you talk about Landon Collins. I think what's going to be interesting to see how they utilize him in this matchup. Without a Saquon Barkley, the Giants truly don't have that threat to beat you in the running game. So I think Collins will be utilized more as a blitzer to try to get after Jones. But I also think Jones and his athleticism, along with the guys like Gallman and, if Hilleman gets out there, they're going to use those guys and Jones's ability to run, to offset what they lost from Saquon Barkley to help keep their ground game on pace, at least keep it honest. So I think you'll see much more RPOs coming from Jones in this game to take advantage of what I think will be an over-aggressive Redskins defense. So a good strategy between both coaches, both OCs and DCs. So it'll be a nice chess match if you love the X's and O's of football out there on Sunday.
All right, Em, we'll be looking forward to seeing you out there. And Giants fans, we thank you as always for listening here to the Valentine's Views podcast, and we will talk to you again soon. Bye-bye now.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.